I didn't know any better. Is that the opening of The Hills Have Eyes by any chance? Yeah, it is. Well, it's very appropriate, Amanda Carey, line that up. Because my next guest is one of the more formidable horror film actors of our generation, folks. Now, Michael Berryman, you know, the name, okay. But if you saw the pictures and everything else, you know what I'm talking about. He gained popularity way back in time. One of my favorite movies of all time, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Remember that with Jack Nicholson? He played Ellis. And I guess you could say his major breakthrough came with his role as Pluto in The Hills Have Eyes, a film directed by the iconic Wes Craven. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Berryman, nice enough to make an appearance here on the airwaves of Long Island, LI News Radio. Sir, how are you? Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much. A nice shout out to everybody in the Northeast. I hope you have a lovely day and are staying safe. We're doing good here in Florida. It's gotten cooler, and we're doing good.
Good. I'm happy to hear you're doing well. You know, with 9 days before Halloween, I thought it was appropriate to get an individual on who has been in the world of horror. And, you know, Michael, I was flipping channels last Saturday, and I caught a little bit of this Eli Roth thing in which he goes over some of the great horror pictures of yesteryear. You were, I think, front and center as far as one of the participants there. And that was interesting in itself. And you had some excellent observations. But, man, I'll tell you, what a list of film that you have participated in over the years. Amazing. Hills Have Eyes, as we met. I mean, if I listed all the films, I'd go into the Brian Kilmeade hour. But, in essence, tell me the genre and everything else and how you all got started in all this.
I got started in a serendipitous manner. In other words, it was a good fortune. I left my university in 1972, didn't have a degree, but I studied a lot of things. And I had, that was in San Luis Obispo, the middle of the state, a very beautiful part of the state. And I moved back to my hometown of Santa Monica, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do next. I didn't have a degree, but I was thinking about my future. And I got a phone call from a buddy in Washington State, who his house had burned to the ground, and he was staying at their neighbor's house while they were on vacation, and he had ordered all of the logs. It was a log home, two-story log home, beautiful. And so he wanted to know if I could come up and help him build his home. So I said, sure. So I packed my bag, and I literally went to Venice Beach, California, and stood on the Coast Highway 1 and stuck out my thumb and got wonderful rides from, the flower children, the hippie generation. It was a wonderful time in our life. And I drove up to, I got a ride to San Francisco, picked up a buddy there, who also went to grammar school with our friend Mark, whose house was lost. And then we drove up to Washington, built his house. And then after 2 months, it was time to head back. And when I came back, I opened up a little shop in Venice Beach with a friend, and I met George Powell, who was across the street at his daughter and son-in-law's antique store. And we were just hanging out, and he happened to be there, and he looked at me and he said, "Are you an actor?" And I go, "No, man, I'm not an actor. Why?" And he said, "Well, you have your face. It's the face I need in my movie, Doc Savage." And we got to talking, and I knew about the books, and he said, "Well, please, I want you in my movie." So he got me into the Screen Actors Guild. I made $400, worked 2 days, got the film at Harold Lloyd State, and it was kind of fun and different. And I figured after the 2 days, I figured, well, that was a quick career. And ironically, a couple months later, I get a phone call from George's casting director, whom I had never met, and that was Mike Fenton and Gene Feinberg. And just by chance, they found, a picture of me from Doc Savage, and they said, "Hey, this guy put a few scars on his skull. He could look like a lobotomy patient, but then having had a craniectomy, and it all fit, of course. And I got a phone call from them, and they said, would you like to come down and meet Michael Douglas and Joel Douglas, Saul Zanson, Milos Forman? And we're doing Kirkland's Nest, and we think you'd make a great lobotomy patient. And I said, sure, man. And I did. And it was a wonderful meeting. And, of course, the story is phenomenal. And I got to work for 127 days, and it was like getting paid $700 for a 60-hour week to learn about the film industry. It was a blessing. I think I built up some good karma points helping my buddy, and the universe kind of paid me back. And the ironic thing was, I had filed for Social Security disability because of my medical issues. And the day I left to go back to California, when my friend Mark came back from the airport, there in the mailbox was a claim check from Social Security. Had it been one day more, I never would have gone back to Santa Monica and bumped into George. So isn't that funny how the world works?
So sometimes it's almost like divine intervention when things happen that way. It's amazing. We're talking with Michael Berryman. He's an unbelievable accredited actor. Horror film genre, really, the specialty. Jack Nicholson, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, one of my all-time favorite films. What was it like working with a young Jack Nicholson? And when you look at his career and see what everything has been accomplished there, I mean, forget it. Iconic beyond. But what was it like working on that set? You got had a lot of talent there, a lot of talent. Give us an idea what was going on there. Foreman was the director in that. So give me an idea of how that went about, Mike.
It was amazing. I flew into Salem, Oregon, which is the state capital, and they have a state mental hospital there. That was the real hospital. We had a wing to ourselves. Dr. Speedy, who played that was the character's name in the movie, was Dean Brooks, who was the real acting head doctor for the facility. That was a functioning facility at that time. We had 6-day weeks, 12-hour days, sometimes longer, and in the first 2 weeks we had rehearsals with read-throughs, scene blocking with camera. We had to watch various movies. We watched Titicut Follies, which is a very difficult documentary on how mental health patients were treated in the 30s and 40s, and they wanted us to really understand what it was like to be a patient, and we actually had to spend an hour a day one-on-one with real patients that gave permission to be interviewed or talked to by an actor, and we learned a lot. We found out things that maybe the hospital did not want us to know. For instance, there's a men's ward and a woman's ward, and then there's a senior's ward, and then there's a criminally insane ward. We spent time with all of those various groups of people. And in Washington State, in the winter, it's cold. So if you have a medical procedure, they don't want to roll you on a gurney or walk you out in the elements. So they have tunnels underneath. And it became information to us that on occasion they would have mixers, not orgies, but mixers where they could socialize. Because these are not criminals. These are human beings that have medical conditions. So the night staff would introduce people to a little more humanity than Nurse Ratched would, for instance, as it's depicted in the film. So it was really eye-opening for all of us. And Jack, my first impression was he's sharp, he's bright, good sense of humor, very, very honest. A really good guy. Well, we had a lot of conversations and time together, and when he was getting his lobotomy scars dialed in by Fred Phillips, who, of course, course, was famous for his father starting the Makeup Artists Union, and he was the one that had designed the ears for Spock and Star Trek. But it was my mentor. Every morning, I would spend about an hour getting my scars. And then later on, after a few months, there was one morning, and there's another chair, and then Jack was getting his scars. And I remember when Fred was shaving some of the hairs off of the front of Jack's forehead, and so he could apply the appliance. Jack actually said to Fred, he goes, "Fred, those hairs will grow back, won't they?" And I sort of tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why?" I said, "Don't be a whiny baby. You know, if they don't grow back, you know, no big whoop. You know, I don't have hair, you know." So and he just smiled and laughed and said, "Yeah, you're right." He wanted to be an NBA player, but he told me, he said, "Michael Powell is your height. I think I could have, gotten into the NBA because he loved the game."
Great.
He would go up and see the Trailblazers whenever they were playing in Portland, and we would change the shooting schedule to accommodate it.
Yeah. Michael, good stuff. We're running out of time here. The iconic Michael Behring, what can you say? And working with Wes Craven as well on Hills of Eyes. We'll have to have you back at some point. Good luck with everything as we embark on the holiday of horror. We think of you in a very good way, and we thank you very much for a couple of minutes in enlightening us a little bit. Great career you've had. Thanks so much, Michael. I appreciate it.
We have a lightning round. You can go to my website, michaelberryman.com, or my Facebook. My autobiography is coming out soon.
Sounds good. We'll look for that. We can't thank you enough. Good stuff.